Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
Was ist noch besser als ein guter Plan? Die Möglichkeit, ihn zu ändern. Mit integrierter KI bietet Workday kontinuierliche Innovationen, die Ihnen helfen, agil zu bleiben, egal was passiert. Workday, the finance and HR system for a changing world.
If you're hearing this, you're probably already listening to BBC's award-winning news podcasts. But did you know that you can listen to them without ads? Get current affairs podcasts like Global News, Americast and The Global Story, plus other great BBC podcasts from history to comedy to true crime, all ad-free. Simply subscribe to BBC Podcast Premium on Apple Podcasts or listen to Amazon Music with a Prime membership. Spend less time on ads and more time with BBC Podcasts.
This is the Happy Pod from the BBC World Service. I'm Paul Moss, and in this edition, we meet the teenage human calculator.
It feels good and amazing when I complete the task correctly.
Also,
it was wonderful to be able to say, because you helped us to complete this clinical trial, we will now be able to use this treatment, or it'll be available to other women in the future.
The new treatment, which could slash the risk of dying from cervical cancer. And the festival hoping to change the perception of East Asian music.
There's a whole wealth of culture from all of East and Southeast Asia that is very, very unique and very, very representative of day-to-day life for a lot of people.
We start with a puzzle, or maybe two. What's the square root of 93? All right, here's another one. What day of the week was it on the 12th of August, 1832? You don't know? Well, me neither, but I have had the chance to speak to a 14-year-old boy who could work out the answer to questions like this and in the blink of an eye. Arian Shukla has just won the Mental Calculation World Cup for the second time and also holds a Guinness World Records title. Arian spoke to me from his home near Mumbai, India, and told me first how his unusual talent was first spotted.
My parents noticed this first, that I was doing something extraordinary. And my parents then researched about the mental math and its competitions.
One of the exercises you did was multiplying 8-digit numbers together. And it says that you managed 28 of these in 10 minutes, which I've got to say I find incredible. I'm going to give you a chance to show us. Here's 2 8-digit numbers to multiply together. 17,487,362 multiplied by 12,945,190.
Okay, I will just fill. The answer is 22638022368870.
Amazing. Now, the other thing which I read you did, which I found particularly extraordinary, is being able to work out the day of the week for any date between 1600 and 2099. So I'm going to give you one of those, if that's okay. How about June the 12th, 1742?
12 June 1742, Tuesday.
That is amazing. I mean, I had to look that up. It took me even longer to do it with a computer. How does it feel when you complete an incredibly difficult task like that?
It feels good that I can do this tough task. But now I'm trying to do it faster, 20 digits by 20 digits in 105 seconds.
Most of us can't even hold a 20-digit number in our heads, let alone multiply them. I mean, what does it feel like? Does it hurt your head?
It feels good and amazing when I complete the task correctly.
I'm delighted to say we're now joined by Arian's father. You must be very proud of your son. He not only won this competition, I think he broke a couple of world records as well.
Yes, we are very proud parents. And he has done something which has never happened in the last 10 editions of the World Cup. So that is very special. Me and my wife are normal human beings. Looking at his journey for last 8 years, what we can observe, as he was very keen from a childhood to play with the numbers.
Fantastic. Arian, what about your friends? What do they think of your achievements?
They are proud of me. And also in India, everyone feels proud that because I represent India, my nation, at various international competitions. So it is an amazing feeling for everyone.
Is it like a sport? I mean, you have to keep practicing to do it.
Yes. And when a competition is a year or a month, so I generally do 6-7 hours.
You're doing maths, mental maths, 6 or 7 hours a day?
Yeah. And in normal circumstances, also I practice 2 to 3 hours.
Is there a plan for the future? I mean, I know you're only 14, but do you want to go on and become a mathematician?
I want to go in a mathematics field and continue doing mental maths side by side.
I saw that you can also calculate square roots. So tell us the square root of, 73.
It is 8.544003.7.
Arian Shukla. Now to a major breakthrough in the efforts to treat cervical cancer, one which uses existing low-cost drugs. It is around the world the fourth most common form of cancer for women and leads to around 350,000 deaths every year. But now a study carried out in Mexico, India, Italy, Brazil and the UK has found a new approach which they believe cuts the risk of dying from cervical cancer by 40% over 5 years. The research was led by University College in London, and it found that the treatment also reduced substantially the chance of the cancer coming back. The Happy Pod's Holly Gibb spoke to Dr. Mary McCormack, an oncologist at UCL Hospital, who told her how they ran this groundbreaking trial.
This was a randomized clinical trial which recruited 500 patients with cervical cancer that was not amenable to surgery. And what we did in the trial was we split the group and we randomized patients to receive either that standard radiation, which is daily treatment with once weekly chemo, and the other group had an additional 6 weeks of chemotherapy before they started the standard of care treatment. And we were able to determine that the patients who had the additional chemotherapy treatment, their survival at 5 years was 8% higher than the survival rate for the patients who had the standard of care treatment. That's quite a big difference.
How groundbreaking is this?
Well, as an oncologist, we always want the best outcome for our patients. And with cervical cancer, we become aware that, unfortunately, the cancer can come back. And what we were trying to do was to see if we gave some additional treatment, could we actually reduce that distant relapse rate? And we were able to show that fewer patients had their evidence of cancer recurring outside of where they'd had the radiotherapy treatment.
What has the feedback been from some of the participants? Have you had any?
Patients are always excited to be part of something that's different. And clearly, when people have remained well, they're excited that this is another treatment that can be offered to others that come along in the future. And I'm just ever so grateful to all the lovely ladies everywhere that, you know, agreed to participate in a clinical trial. And so, you know, it was wonderful to be able to say, because you helped us to complete this clinical trial, we will now be able to use this treatment, or it'll be available to other women in the future.
And on a personal level, how does it feel that you have been part of something so groundbreaking?
I've derived a lot of satisfaction from seeing the process through. Now that we've published our results in a peer-reviewed journal, The Lancet, which is a very high impact factor, this approach can actually be incorporated into national and international guidelines. And that's very important, because then the doctors and the oncologists treating these patients will have the confidence to say, this data is now published, and feel confident to actually use it in clinical practice.
So what does the future of cervical cancer look like? What can we expect from future medical advances?
But what we must not forget is that cervical cancer is preventable. Of course, we are very fortunate now to have access to the HPV vaccine. And of course, what we must continue to do is to encourage everybody to go for their cervical screening. And I think the final thread then is anybody who develops any new symptoms, particularly if you're a young lady bleeding between your periods or bleeding after intercourse, please, please consult your doctor. Likewise, for ladies after the menopause, please, please go and see your doctor, because the earlier we actually pick these things up, the better the chances are that we'll be able to get rid of it for good.
Dr. Mary McCormack speaking to Holly Gibbs. The music of East Asia has become phenomenally popular in recent years, particularly K-pop from South Korea and its Japanese equivalent J-pop. But now a group of artists are trying to expand people's tastes, encouraging awareness of the full range of musical styles and genres in that region. They're performing at a new festival in London, Margins United. Our reporter Tara Mewawala went along.
This is Badots, an electronic music star from the Philippines. Show and Tuna, a.k.a. DJ Love, produces Badots music inspired by his home in the squatter area of Davao City.
When you live in the squatter area, you hear everything, like the sounds of a bird. Tew, 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 tew. The lizard song, like, and the dog, oh. That sounds music to me. I remix it so that poor people, they will appreciate it because they can relate it. And they hear it everything, everyday life in her community.
DJ Love is one of the artists who performed at the festival, which organisers say is the first in Europe to celebrate East and Southeast Asian alternative culture. It was set up by a music label based in London.
I'm David. I'm one of the co-founders of Eastern Margins. Especially in UK and Europe, there's a good understanding of a lot of mainstream culture from East Asia. So the likes of anime from Japan and K-pop from Korea have had a lot of, I think, global recognition. But there's a whole wealth of culture from all of East and Southeast Asia that is very, very unique and very, very representative of day-to-day life for a lot of people.
Outside the noisy club, I chat to people from all over the continent who have come to celebrate their heritage.
I'm Jax, and I'm from Melbourne, Australia. I think, like, a lot of people think Asian music's one thing, or like more traditional stuff, but to have so many artists showcase such different sounds, it's really important to bring us all together.
I'm Claire, I'm from the Philippines. I want to see DJ Love, that's literally my jam. I hear it in like the streets, in the jeepneys, in construction sites. It's like, when you say that, when you play with Dots, like out here in London, it's becoming like a big scene now.
Hello, my name is Carter Town and I'm Canadian. It's important to have a place for the Asian people and for Chinese people, for like queer people, for all of these people to just come together and share like the community that we have.
Backstage during soundcheck, half German, half Chinese musician Lia Lia explains why it means so much to her.
I mixed, so it was always hard to find exactly the place where you fit in, either in the West or the Asian, because you're always like kind of in between. And coming here, I feel you feel a lot of like-minded people, you know, people who are influenced by both culture. And I feel like festivals like Eastern Margin is covering out a space for people like us. Like, I wish when I was younger that I had more role models, more people to look up to.
Another musician, Shell Hill from Malaysia, performed at Eastern Margins in his first ever trip to the UK.
People are craving definitely for more diversity and inclusivity. You know, we have too many cultures and too many sonic palettes to be offering to the world, and we are just doing our part and offering like this different dish. It feels for me kind of monumental, I would say. Because I don't think, especially Southeast Asian, like either you can say alternative or like underground-ish music has this spotlight. It's history making, I would say.
Call me Mr. Asia.
Malaysian musician Shell Hill ending that report from Tara Mewawala. Coming up in this podcast,
we prepare the okra soup with cassava flour. We eat it and the power will come, and the stomach will be strengthened to produce twins.
What makes a town in southwest Nigeria the self-proclaimed twin capital of the world?
If you're hearing this, you're probably already listening to BBC's award-winning news podcasts. But did you know that you can listen to them without ads? Get current affairs podcasts like Global News, Americast and The Global Story, plus other great BBC podcasts from history to comedy to true crime, all ad-free. Simply subscribe to BBC Podcast Premium on Apple Podcasts or listen to Amazon Music with a Prime membership. Spend less time on ads and more time with BBC Podcasts.
Stradivarius violins are famous the world over as the very best ever made. With the price of a Stradivarius usually in the millions, most musicians can only dream of even being able to touch one. But now visitors to a museum in Italy can come close by holding a 3D printed model that's a precise copy of the real thing. The replica has taken 10 years to perfect, and it was apparently made to encourage blind and partially sighted people to start playing the violin. Marco Balagodi is head of the Arvedi Laboratory at the Museum of Violins in Cremona. The Happy Pod's Abiona Boya started by asking him what was so special about the Stradivarius sound.
The sound of Stradivari is quite different, and it depends by the violin you are using. But in general, we can say that the Stradivari has a power in sounding.
My understanding is that you and the team have been working on this project for 10 years. Tell me more about why it was so important for you and for the team to complete this.
The first advantage that we can get is the conservation of those instruments, because we can study them, but we can leave them in the case of the museum. But at the same time, we started to study the shape, and we could use to comparing different musical instruments in the shape of the violins. This is very, very important for violin makers that today are working in Cremona.
So this 3D Stradivarius is pretty accurate to the original thing. Does that mean that this can be played as well?
Not today, because we printed with a synthetic material now. And the first use that we can do with this model is to let the violin makers touch it, have it, and use that information in making a wonderful and high, more performant violins. And we are working now in using for the printing of the violin exactly the same material of the violin. So we will see probably in the future we can do it.
So how will this 3D model inspire visitors who come to the museum and come to see it?
The visitors and the violin makers that will come in the museum, they can touch it, they can see it, they can take a picture. We have a wonderful table, so they can sit there and just to see how all the shapes, and then they can see the original violin in the case. So they have a comparison between the original one and the copy. But the original is not possible to touch, because we conserve it, and it's very, very expensive violin. So it's around more than 10 million of euro.
The 3D copies and the museum exhibition are going to be used to encourage visually impaired and blind people to learn how to play the violin.
Yeah.
How does that make you feel to know that a group of people who traditionally wouldn't have access to playing this instrument will now be inspired to do so and will be helped through your work?
Of course, they can touch it. They can have in their hands, and they can touch it. And we have a guide, of course, that can explain all the part of the violin, and that is like if they can have in their hand the original Stradivarius, because the quality of this kind of printing is so high, they can have this kind of experience. Of course, the first feeling is I feel proud of our work, proud of our technology, and I'm proud to sharing all those information and techniques.
Marco Malagodi speaking from Cremona in Italy. Here's a statistic for you. Your chance of being born a twin is 1 in 42. At least that's the international average. But there's a town in southwest Nigeria where 1 in every 10 births is a twin. And that's something the people of Ibo Oro positively celebrate, holding an annual festival to mark their self-proclaimed status as twin capital of the world.
Drums, trumpets and dance. For Nigeria's Yoruba community, being a twin is worth celebrating. Wearing matching traditional dress and representing all age groups, hundreds of twins gather every year in Oyo State, the Igbo Oro Twin Festival. This town has a very unique heritage, boasting one of the highest concentrations of twins in the world. For every 100 births here, 5 are twin births. That's more than 4 times the global average. Something mother of twins, Obiyemi Dane, knows all too well.
Among my mother's children, I am the only one that is not a twin. 5 times my mother gave birth to twins. I was so happy when I saw them, which made me hope that I would also have twins and give them the same clothes and the same shoes. And now I have them.
There's no proven scientific explanation for the high numbers of twins in Igbo Oro. Researchers say genetics play a huge part. However, many locals, like Mojisola Adeska, says it's all down to diet. She uses a large club to pummel okra leaf into a soup to serve with pounded yam, a traditional dish in the region.
We prepare the okra soup with cassava flour. We eat it and the power will come, and the stomach will be strengthened to produce twins.
Whatever the reason, in Yoruba culture, having twins is celebrated as a gift from the supreme god Oludumare. The younger twin is often given the name Kindi, its literal meaning, the one who came after. The eldest, named Taiwo, meaning the first to see the world. Taiwo Oguntoye is one of the organisers of this year's festival.
You know, the fertility, the fraternity of being twins, you know, like we love ourselves, because it is not our choice to be twins, it is destiny that made us twins. We just open our lives to be in the world and we find ourselves to be twins. That's the uniqueness.
It's why Taiwo wants the festival recognised as a UNESCO cultural heritage event. He hopes it will boost Nigeria's tourism and raise awareness of the Yoruba people's unique and vibrant culture. Twins may be in abundance, but for the people of Igbo Oro, their town is one of a kind.
Ella Bicknell reporting. Now some other news. Scientists in New Zealand have discovered a new species of what's known as a ghost shark, a rare type of fish that's incredibly hard to spot because it lives deep in the Pacific Ocean. Ghost sharks, also known as chimeras, don't have scales and their skeletons are completely made of cartilage. The team who discovered the new species, the Australasian narrow-nosed spookfish, say the find is exciting and they'll now work out how best to protect them. A powered paraglider pilot in Egypt has spotted an unusual sight while flying over the Great Pyramid of Giza. Footage he shot has gone viral on social media. It shows a dog barking and generally playing around at the pyramid's summit, more than 150 metres above the ground. The animal appears to be addressing its barks at passing birds. A cat, which has lived at an ambulance station in London for 16 years, has been saved from eviction. Defib, as it's known, was rescued by the site's staff as a kitten, but new managers had threatened to rehome him. A public outcry led to a petition receiving more than 60,000 signatures, and Defib is now allowed to stay. And after months of rehabilitation, an injured turtle has been returned to the wild. The loggerhead turtle named Nazare washed up on a beach in the northwest England county of Cumbria. It seems to have come originally from the Azores, ending up in Britain by mistake and needing support. Jane McCubbin has more on this reptile road to recovery.
Her name is Nazare, and she is incredibly lucky to be alive. Back in February, the loggerhead turtle was discovered by a dog walker after being washed up on the Cumbrian coast. She was cold and weak and far from the warm waters which should have been home. A team from Blackpool Sea Life Centre were called to action.
So she was motionless. She was just about making some movements with her eyes, and she was completely covered all over a shell in algae and seaweeds, like she'd been floating around in the sea for some time.
Her journey had taken her far off track into the cold, stormy waters of the Irish Sea. Her rescuers knew this because of a satellite tracking device found on her back. That revealed Nazare's habit of getting lost and being found.
Which was amazing because we found out that she was released from the coast of France, from La Roche Aquarium, where she'd been rehabilitated in June in 2023. So it wasn't the first time she'd been in a facility like ours. And the tag stopped beeping around December time, just off the coast of Ireland. And that means she probably got stuck in the storms then and disappeared. So she'd had a bit of a rough couple of months, we reckon, from the condition of her.
Those months had taken their toll. Staff removed algae with a toothbrush. By rights, she should have died. But her dehydration and pneumonia were treated over 3 weeks of 24-hour care.
Ready?
And when she was finally ready to fend for herself, Nazare's final journey took her here. The warm, blue waters of the Azores. And almost 2,500 miles from the Irish Sea, she was released.
And it was simply incredible. She kind of went into the water, kind of had a little bit of a look around, and before you know it, she rocketed off into the, you know, the vast blue that you could see kind of before you. We didn't really get a chance to say goodbye. It was that quick. And it was just brilliant in the sense that it was the culmination of lots of different teams coming together to allow this turtle to go back to the wild. And that's what it's all about for us. It's about giving something back and giving an animal a second chance.
The team hope this is the last time she ever experiences the skills and TLC of European aquariums.
Jane McCubbin. And that's all from the Happy Pod for now. We'd love to hear from you if you've got a story for us, or just want to tell us what you thought of any of our stories. As ever, the address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. This edition was mixed by Dan Ehrlich, and the producers were Holly Gibbs and Rachel Bulkley. The editor is Karen Martin. I'm Paul Moss. Until next time, goodbye.
If you're hearing this, you're probably already listening to BBC's award-winning news podcasts. But did you know that you can listen to them without ads? Get current affairs podcasts like Global News, Americast and The Global Story, plus other great BBC podcasts from history to comedy to true crime, all ad-free. Simply subscribe to BBC Podcast Premium on Apple Podcasts or listen to Amazon Music with a Prime membership. Spend less time on ads and more time with BBC Podcasts.